of interest in sand in this state, and a long list of people who wish to testify. We had explicitly asked several state agencies that have a role in related to this to come, so we're going to have them present first. For the remainder, what we tried to do is try and figure out a fair way to divvy up the time, and when we get to the citizen testimony, proponents of each side, I'm not sure what's proponents and what is opponents, but two sides largely had six people we lumped together. We're going to give them a 20-minute period each. They can divide up the way they want, so if some want to use more time and some want to use less, and then from then on, we're going to be taking 2 minutes each for the remainder of the people. If we keep this very efficient, there's a chance we can get through the entire agenda. We thank the House Committee for coming here and coming here early, because I believe your committee doesn't normally start at this time. And I will ask members of the House and Senate committees, first of all, to limit. Today is not the time for debate or argument from committee members. We'll have our chance as bills are introduced. Today we're here to hear from many people, some of who have come from several hours away to come here and testify. And so we're looking forward to hearing their input. So if you really have a pressing clarification type question, we'll take that. But otherwise, we'll ask. We can also, you ask a question, it's going to be a long answer. We can ask them to submit it in writing to us. We will distribute it to both the House and Senate committees. With that, I'd like to start with Commissioner Dave Fredrickson, who is chair of the EQB. And I would ask that the agency folks, we'd like to finish this first part, despite all the stuff to cover, if we can, in as close to half an hour as possible. And I believe Commissioner Fredrickson, because you're kicking off, you may be more than some of the others in length of time, but I ask you to please be respectful of the time crunch here. And welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator Marty. Mr. Chairman, can I keep this now for further entrance, or do I have to turn it in?
You may keep it any time that you're get out.
The process is going to involve
into jail-free.
All of these, this large hearing. I want to hang on to this, or I suppose you're going to change color on me for the next hearing. Senator Marty and members, thank you very much for the opportunity to come over and represent the Environmental Quality Board. I'm Dave Fredrickson. I serve as chair of the Environmental Quality Board. I also serve, my principal line of toil is that of the Commissioner of Agriculture. And it's a real pleasure for me to be here today. Today we're obviously discussing silica sand mining, also known as frac sand mining here in Minnesota. Minnesota has sand deposits that are used for many industrial purposes like glass, bottles, shingles, et cetera, but they also are valuable for injecting in wells to extract oil and gas in the process known as hydrofracking. We, at least the EQB members, are here basically to talk about the sand issue and its effects on Minnesota communities, especially in the Driftless area, southeastern Minnesota. Last month, former Senator Alan Anderson and Bob Patton, the executive director of the EQB, I believe were here before your committee testifying regarding the EQB's mission and the authority it has in general. The EQB is made up of 9 commissioners of state agencies plus 5 citizen members appointed by the governor on a staggered term basis. And one of the main responsibilities of EQB is to consider and study problems of interdepartmental concern to state government. EQB has responsibility to write environmental review rules, to provide guidance to responsible governmental units, or RGUs, and in some cases to designate who the RU or RGU will be. It also has authority to order a generic environmental impact statement, or a GEI. a GEIS. Last summer, the EQB began to look into the issue of silica sand mining. EQB holds monthly meetings, which are always open to the public. Our June meeting, we took testimony from concerned citizens expressing environmental, health, and other concerns regarding silica sand mining in central and southwestern Minnesota. And the citizens stated their intent to petition the Environmental Quality Board for a GEIS. generic environmental impact statement. The GEIS is not project-specific like an environmental impact statement. Rather, it's a study of significant regional and cumulative impacts of a particular type. Citizens also asked for a moratorium on sand mine activity pending completion of the GEIS. The July meeting, we had presentations from agency experts on silica sand mining characteristics and issues. I also had the opportunity to travel to Wisconsin and on a personal basis had an opportunity to visit at least three silica sand mining operations. So I've had some up close and personal experience with the issue. Our August meeting, we took testimony from petitioners for the GEIS and other concerned citizens. Also, we invited local officials, local government, to talk about local government responses and their experiences. Our September meeting, we took testimony from industry and the business community. October meeting, the board directed staff, and keep in mind, we are down to two staff members on the Environmental Quality Board, along with our executive director, who works pretty much full-time on the EQB, but is an employee of the Department of Agriculture, Bob Patton. Again, our October board meeting, we directed staff to work with agency experts and develop a report on what is known and what is not known on silica sand industry and potential impacts. And the purpose was to evaluate whether to order a GEIS or whether there are other constructive actions that the state could, in this situation, take. Our January meeting, we had presentations on the draft silica sand report, in other words, what was known and what is not known. Our staff has created a map, and Vanna White is here to hold it up.
Hi, Vanna.
Mr. Chairman, Vanna looks a lot older than she used to.
We spent a significant amount of time putting together a resource. The orange obviously shows the deposits across the state, particularly in southwestern Minnesota. And I'm told that you have in your packet an additional an additional map that only enhances what we've put on our map right now. So it gives you, I think, a good visual presentation of where the deposits are. EQB has received a number of letters on this issue. At our citizens' forums around the state, and we've held five of them, and we will finish up with an environmental congress in March. This issue was brought forward time and again, particularly in our Rochester meeting, where we had significant discussion about silica sand mining in that part of the state. We heard from many concerned citizens, obviously, about this very important issue. The governor and EQB have been very focused on this issue and have been evaluating how we can best help local communities deal with it adequately. However, with the legislature in session, the governor's approach and EQB's approach was to not act, but to ask the governor to become involved in this much broader discussion that is so important to Minnesota. We could have ordered, from an EQB perspective, a GEIS. However, that would have meant us coming to the legislature during the time that you convened and asking for the resources to move forward with it. The last GEIS was the feedlot GEIS. The cost of that was somewhere in the area of $2.6 million. One prior to that in the 80s was, I believe, Forest Products. That was somewhere in the area of $875,000 to complete the GEIS. So this is not an issue where the administration should move forward without the legislature, or I believe the legislature should move forward without support from the administration. And the governor is very focused on making sure we have a broad conversation about this this very issue. I have keep in mind that the Environmental Quality Board is made up of nine commissioners and five citizen members. Commissioner Stein is one of those members, and our role as the Department of Agriculture is really minimal, if if not zero, in terms of this issue, other than its effect on farmland. We have no regulatory authority, and obviously MPCA and the DNR has some regulatory and health have regulatory authority in that regard. Again, my role here today is to operate as the chair of the Environmental Quality Board. With that, I know you have hundreds of folks here, obviously, that want to speak, and I would be happy to stand for any questions, and if there are none, pass it off to my colleague, Commissioner Stein.
Thank you, Commissioner Fredrickson, and I'm sure the EQB will be in close touch with both the committees as we move forward with possible legislation.
We can run, I can run, but I will die a tired man. In other words, they'll catch you. That was a joke.
Commissioner Stein, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the members and go ahead with the PCA presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Linkstein. I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I'm here today to speak to the MPCA's permitting responsibilities and a recent letter that we sent to Winona County regarding environmental assessment worksheets for two projects that were currently under review at Winona County. The PCA has broad responsibilities for water quality and air quality in Minnesota. We also, as you know, have solid waste management requirements that do not apply to this subject. So I wanted to briefly cover our water quality responsibilities under the Clean Water Act. The state has authority to issue permits for activities that might result in impairments or impacts by discharges to surface or groundwaters. And so those discharges come in the form of, in frac sand mining, the construction-related activities when you remove the ground cover and you alter the surface of the ground and you can accelerate runoff and stormwater impacts to groundwater or surface waters. So a construction stormwater permit is generally required because anything that disturbs more than an acre of land requires permission under our construction stormwater permitting program. Similarly, if the facility is going to exist for a long period of time and will use water or have the potential to discharge waters to a surface or groundwaters on or off a site, industrial stormwater permit may be required. And those are typically required for actions that might involve, in the case of mining, washing of the sand, processing of the sand, but also for storage of materials on site, including fuels and other materials that are used in the mining process. So there could be the potential for discharge and impacts to surface or groundwater. Moving on to air quality, our agency is responsible under the Federal Clean Air Act and under statutes to address emissions to air that have the potential to cause either particulate matter discharges or other contaminants. In the case of sand mining, the primary consideration for an air permit would be the drying operations when some heating equipment, a furnace, or some other facility might be required to dry the sand after it's washed and processed. Those kinds of dryers and furnaces that fuel them can have emissions both in particulate matter as well as emissions from smokestacks because of fuels that are used. Those permits can run from very simple routine types of permits depending on the scope of the project to a more complicated individual permit that can take longer and be a much more complicated kind of review. Our responsibilities under the Clean Air Act also address fugitive dust, and the state has rules that are implemented through local government controls. And those are to control the emissions of fugitive dust so that there is no potential risk to off-site users. And with regard to air quality, one of the constituents of silica sand mining that is poorly understood at the present time is a constituent of particulate matter that is of a specific type and size, categorized as PM4. Those of you who understand or have heard us speak about particulate matter categories in the past, there's particulate matter of 10 microns or smaller, thank you. 10 microns or smaller, and particulate matter that is of 2.5 microns or smaller. Silica comes in a different constituent. It's of 4 microns or smaller, and it is of specific chemistry, silica. There is very little data from existing sources of information about the potential for those particles to be transmitted to the air from mining operations. There are some current studies going on in Wisconsin that we're following very closely, but we see a need for additional information regarding particulate matter of 4 microns and smaller that is of the silica constituent. I believe our colleagues from the Minnesota Department of Health will speak more to the potential health effects that are known or unknown related to that. Lastly, of our regulatory duties under the law, noise controls, again, are established by state rules but implemented through local controls and local government action, and have been in that managed in that way since the mid-1980s. I wrote a letter that I wanted to address briefly before the joint committee today on that I wrote to Mr. Jason Gilman of the Winona County Planning and Environmental Services Department on February 4th, 2013, regarding two specific projects that were up for review for two quarry operations. One goes by the name of the Dobbelstein Quarry, and the other by Yoder. Those environmental assessment worksheets were brought before the Winona County Board for review. I wanted to just briefly touch on the scope of my comments and why I made them. We had concerns after reviewing the environmental assessment worksheet documents that there may be phased and connected actions that play into consideration under the Environmental Quality Board's environmental review rules. Phased and connected actions are defined in the rules and often come into play when things are being constructed in a sort of a not single period of time operation. And when we looked at the map and we heard had conversations with the county staff about the potential for additional mining operations and some unanswered questions regarding the processing of the sand that was going to come from these mines, it appeared to us that there is the potential for phased and connected actions under the rules, and that the appropriate way to address that would be for the county to conduct an environmental impact statement. Additionally, because the actions were several in nature, we also commented on the potential for cumulative effects on uses of water in the area and emissions to air, as well as the processing and hauling and other community-based impacts. So we commented on the potential for cumulative effects that should be further studied. We also talked about some areas where there was incomplete information or insufficient information in the environmental assessment worksheets pertaining to processing, drying, dust control, mineland reclamation, stormwater discharges, air emissions, and the potential for health impacts to neighboring properties and the communities. Lastly, we commented on the actual size and scope and magnitude of the mining operations. Both EAWs talked about an initial mining operation, but the potential for the mines to expand to a much larger size. And under the EQB rules, a mine that exceeds 160 acres should be reviewed under an environmental impact statement. And we believe that the projects looked in totality could be construed to be somewhere in the order of 280 acres in total, and should be therefore be reviewed under an environmental impact statement. So those are the comments that we made to the Winona County Board. We had conversations with the staff, our staff at our agency who do environmental review work, particularly focused on stormwater and site runoff concerns, as well as air emissions, and the potential for these actions to cause a more broad impact on the community. With that, we've got additional environmental assessment worksheets currently under review at the agency. Comments are due tomorrow on a Fillmore County site, a Blue Earth County site, and another Winona County site. So we're today wrapping up our comments on those facilities as well. Lastly, Mr. Chair, if I could just comment about some of the differences that drove us to comment on this facility, the facilities in Winona County that are developed in a more hub-and-spoke style of development of mining operations, where the sand mining and the processing occurs at different locations, and then there's a significant amount of hauling and traffic that goes along with that, as compared to the mining operations that have been permitted in the state for many, many years, most of them along the Minnesota River Valley, Uniman, and Jordan Sands, Great Plains Sands, some of which are in Shakopee, Jordan, and Le Sueur County, Blue Earth County as well. Those facilities are more a single pit operation with confined processing operations, washing and hauling directly from the site, usually by rail car. Those types of mining operations are much more clearly understood and have a long history of documentation for our agency, and so our comments on those kinds of proposed mining operations have been much more easily defined. The mining operations have been proposed in southeastern Minnesota, Winona County, Fillmore County, Wabasha County, and also Goodhue County are not as clearly defined in one single operation. They're more distributed and dispersed across the landscape. So that's why we had additional questions and comments on those. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Stein. That's helpful to make the comparison what's out there. The DNR is next. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Jess Richards. I'm the Director of the Lands and Minerals Division for the Department of Natural Resources. I'll be very brief, and then I'll turn it over to Steve Hirsch. The Lands and Minerals Division with the Department of Natural Resources manages aggregate and sand mining through Minnesota Statute 84.94. Essentially, our role in this is to provide technical information, assistance to local governments. We produce resource maps. We also have got some information on our website about silica sand mining and frequently asked questions. And we also assist with local governments in their permitting efforts as far as reclamation permitting. So to date, our role in silica sand mining has really been an informational role. We've gone out and done some presentations with our staff in the different community meetings. And we continue to provide that support as needed by the local governments. When it comes to environmental review, as Commissioner Stein mentioned, with the Pollution Control Agency, the DNR Lands and Minerals Division, along with the Ecological and Water Resources Division, also plays a role in supporting the local governments, providing information, helping with any questions they might have in their environmental review process. Local governments are the responsible governmental units for environmental review for silica sand mining, and the environmental review rules allow the department and ask the department to participate in that to the extent possible. The permitting, the DNR does not have any permitting authority with respect to silica sand mining, and that's all handled at a local level at this time. However, we do have some permitting authority in our waters, and so I'll turn it over to Director Hirsch.
Welcome.
Thank
to
you,
the
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, Members. Steve Hirsch, DNR Director of Ecological and Water Resources. So we have permitting responsibilities in three main areas, and that would be a water appropriation permit, a public waters work permit, and then a takings permit if a threatened and endangered species would be impacted. And I'll just talk very briefly about these permitting responsibilities. We've got many, but not all frac sand mining operations do require a water appropriation or water use permit. If they use over 10,000 gallons a day or 1 million gallons per year, they would need one of these permits. And this could be for dewatering, it could be for washing, and basically any use of this water at those amounts would require a permit from us. And we don't handle, as you know, we don't necessarily handle the groundwater quality issues. That's handled by PCA and Department of Health, but we can work with those agencies on our permitting responsibilities if we need to incorporate their concerns or if we would need to deny a permit because of issues that those two agencies would raise. Frac sand mining facilities also occasionally impact public waters, and we have a public waters permitting for these situations, and this would be for a project that impacts the coarse, current, or cross-section of a public water. And we would look at permits like this and issue them on the basis of what the nature of the impact was, and then also proof that there was not an alternative with less impact available. Finally, the takings permits are permits for taking threatened endangered species. What we look at there, if there's going to be a listed species, and these are state-listed species now, not federal-listed species, but if there's going to be a state-listed species that would be impacted, we look for the ability to mitigate for those impacts. If it's a big impact, we might ask that an area that has the species that are going to be impacted be purchased with a conservation easement to protect that species in another area, or we might ask for additional survey work or something like that if it was a smaller impact. So those are basically the three permitting areas that DNR does get involved with, and just very briefly what we do with those.
Thank you both. Next, we have Department of Health. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Aggie Lighthizer. I'm an assistant commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Health, and I'll do an overview of the general activities we've been involved in, and then I'll turn it over to James Kelly, who is the manager of the Environmental Surveillance and Assessment Section, who was involved in the letter to Winona County. The Minnesota Department of Health has been actively following issues around silica sand mining for more than a year, and we received a lot of calls and emails from citizens and local officials who are interested in what the public health impacts around this industry might involve. At the request of those officials, we have made presentations at various meetings on the potential public health concerns associated with silica sand mining, and we have done a fact sheet, which I believe has been given to the committee. These concerns in particular centered around potential exposure to crystalline silica, a known human carcinogen, the impact of increased truck traffic, and the potential impact of mining operations on groundwater quality. Information on some of those areas is definitely lacking. We have been very involved in the efforts of the Environmental Quality Board to develop a comprehensive report on the industry. However, we have no direct regulatory authority over silica sand mining, processing, or transportation. We do, however, have responsibility for enforcing the state well code, which covers the construction of water wells that may be associated with these operations. However, exploratory borings for aggregate prospecting are not regulated under the well code, and some concern about proper installation and sealing of these borings has been raised. As Commissioner Stein mentioned, the Health Department has been requested by PCA to develop ambient air exposure guidance for crystalline silica, which will be completed sometime later this year. This guidance value could be used by PCA and the local governments in the permitting process for facilities. MDH also has expertise in the health impact assessment process, which is a community-based tool that can be used to better evaluate the potential health impacts of the industry or individual facilities. We'll continue to research and evaluate these potential public health concerns, respond to requests for information, and review and comment as appropriate on environmental assessment worksheets and environmental impact statements. And we did do that with the Winona mines, and I'll turn it over to Mr. Kelly for that.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committees, again, my name is James Kelly. I'm the manager of environmental surveillance and assessment within the Environmental Health Division at the Minnesota Department of Health, and I just want to talk briefly about the comment letter that the department provided with regards to the two proposed mine facilities in Winona County. We prepared a letter that was signed by Commissioner Ellinger and dated February 6, 2013, to convey our comments to Winona County with regards to the two facilities. Our comments were based on a careful staff review of the two documents, environmental assessment worksheets, and focused on groundwater quality, air quality, and the potential for increased truck traffic, which are the main public health concerns that, as you heard just a minute ago, the department has been evaluating with regards to these types of operations in the silica sand industry. Our conclusions were based on the staff review were that the two documents, the environmental assessment worksheets, did not adequately address our concerns regarding the potential for future groundwater contamination, did not include air monitoring for crystalline silica, which is the primary concern we're associated with regards to air quality from these facilities, and did not adequately address concerns related to increased truck traffic. The department also believed, as the MPCA concluded, that the two projects are part of a phased and connected larger project under EQB rules with the potential for cumulative impacts associated with the number of facilities concentrated in a fairly small area. So overall, for the reasons I've just stated, MDH recommended to Winona County that a broader environmental impact statement be conducted for the facilities and a positive declaration on the need for an EIS be made by the county board. And that was the basic conclusion of our letter. Thank you.
Thank you very much, both of you. Finally, we want to hear from MnDOT. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Scott Peterson. I'm the Government Affairs Director at MnDOT, and with me is Carol Zoff, who is involved with our Great River Road and Mississippi River Trail programs. We've been monitoring the silica sand development situation for several months, primarily in order to monitor the safety, mobility, and impact on the physical condition of the state's transportation system. There's a fair amount of truck transportation involved in silica mining, as you've heard already, where facilities are not co-located. Trucks are used to transport sand to processing plants and also to intermodal facilities where sand is transferred to rail cars or barges. Processed sand is usually shipped to the end user via rail. We just had a map, I believe all members have in their packets and some available to the public, that shows the transportation system in southeastern Minnesota, shows the condition of the system and the traffic counts in those areas. As a result of the silica sand activity in Minnesota and Wisconsin, there has been really some kind of heavy traffic in specific areas. Truck weight limits are established by each road authority. MnDOT does it for the state system. Counties would do it for the county system, cities, townships, et cetera, for their roads within their jurisdiction. The weight of sand trucks has not been a problem on state highways. That is, as long as they are within legal loads and configurations. Truck weights are checked at weigh stations throughout the state and enforced by the state patrol on the state trunk highway system or by local law enforcement on the local road system. And again, as long as they adhere to legal weight and size limits, MnDOT does not regulate the number of sand trucks or the routes upon which they travel. A permit from MnDOT or a local government is not required to move legal loads for this type of freight. As a divisible load, it's basically not eligible for most of our overweight permitting. However, the jurisdiction permitting a sand facility, for example, in a county, may negotiate routing as part of the condition of a sand facility's permit. However, their authority to enforce the routing is limited by the extent of their political jurisdiction. In general, on the state highway system and a considerable amount of the county state aid system, they're designed to handle these legal heavyweight systems, legal heavyweight vehicles. On the state system, again, the amount of traffic related to silica sand is a small percentage of the total commercial traffic. For example, on the Winona Bridge, sand-related traffic as a percentage of the heavy vehicle traffic on the Winona Bridge is 15% of the heavy vehicle traffic, but the heavy vehicle traffic on the Winona Bridge is only 9% of the total traffic on the bridge, so it's 15% of 9% of the traffic. All the state bridges in the area where the silica sand is currently being mined is located, basically there, the bridges are structurally capable of handling traffic at these volumes. Local road systems, it's a little bit different situation. High volumes of sand-related traffic tend to be very localized and concentrated. Trucks move on limited routes between the mine processing and the intermodal loading facilities. The ability of local road systems to handle large numbers of heavy vehicles varies, but many local roads and bridges are not designed to handle a large volume of heavy vehicles. And for those folks who have been involved in transportation know that there's a kind of a hierarchy of roads based upon the function in which they serve. So the roads that are designed to handle heavy loads and carry them for some distance are built to a stronger standard than some of the local roads and lower-level county roads. A permitting jurisdiction, again, can negotiate maintenance and roadway improvement costs in permit fees. There is some anecdotal information from Wisconsin that we've heard about where some of the local jurisdictions have been able to negotiate a fairly high level of fees in order to pay for local road damage. We are not aware of any considerable local problems related to increased truck traffic. Apparently there has been some in Winona, very localized, but we have also not heard of a lot of damage being reported to date. traffic safety, along with the usual potential for conflicts between passenger vehicles and heavy trucks. Much of the state silica sand is located in regions with bicycle, pedestrian, and even Amish buggy traffic. On the map, you'll see that the state has identified one particular route where there's notable volumes of Amish buggy traffic. Ensuring the safety of the highway and roadway users is the responsibility of the applicable road authority, including costs to improve safety through roadway improvements such as turn lanes and the addition of separated bike trails or wider shoulders to accommodate other types of traffic. New or modified driveway access to a state highway and most local roadways requires a permit from the local road authority, and conditions of that permit may require improvements directly related to the functioning of the access point. So if a driveway is put in, the state can require that there be a left turn lane or a right turn lane added, and maybe some type of intersection control in order to improve safety at that point. There are also historic, scenic, and recreational assets in this area and along some of the major highways, and Ms. Zoff is going to speak to that here in just a second. Finally, just a little bit about truck safety and load management. Silica sand is classified as a non-hazardous commodity under federal law for freight movement. Fully dried and graded sand is transported in covered hoppers to prevent loss and contamination. By federal and state law, all loads must be tarped on federal and state trunk highways and at speeds above 30 miles per hour on all roads. So requirements of covered loads can be enforced by any jurisdiction's law enforcement officer. So if a law enforcement officer sees a untarped load being hauled on any road, whether or not it's within their whether it's on a road within their jurisdiction, they can take action. And of course, all trucks are required to meet equipment safety standards per U.S. DOT, MnDOT, and Department of Public Safety regulations. As I mentioned earlier, railroads are a key factor since they ship or they carry most of the silica sand to its final destination. And it's shipped in unit trains, usually about 110 train cars. Rail traffic is regulated at the federal level per the interstate commerce law, basically preempting local regulations except where police powers to protect health and safety are needed. Local train traffic may increase by a single train every 1 to 3 days, is our current estimate. Statewide, 2.5 sand trains are added daily to a usual statewide rail traffic count of about 150 trains per day. MnDOT and local jurisdictions, in addition to the railroads, are jointly responsible for safety at all rail grade crossings. And barges are used to transport a relatively small amount of silica sand. We estimate about 30 barges per year.
Go ahead, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Ms. Zoff, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator Marty and members. My name is Carol Zoff. I work with the Minnesota Department of Transportation in the Office of Environmental Stewardship. One of my duties is to serve as MnDOT's Great River Road Program Coordinator. As such, I have been asked by local byway partners and the Minnesota-Mississippi River Parkway Commission to bring to your attention the Great River Road National Scenic Byway and to suggest frameworks to help assess potential impacts from the silica sand industry. 2013, this year, marks the 75th year of the Great River Road. It's a 10-state road network that celebrates the Mississippi River through a wide variety of river exploration by residents and tourists alike. In 1938, Secretary of Interior Harold Ickes envisioned a Great River Road as a means to celebrate America's largest river, restoring it from an increasingly industrial use paradigm towards a parkway. Since that time, local, state, and federal investments have developed facilities along the river valley that attract residents and tourists. The Parkway Commission, the statutory champions of the Great River Road, and local byway stakeholders are concerned that the byway, the resources it celebrates, the byway traveler experience, and the tourism economy the byway supports will be negatively impacted by silica sand development unless potential impacts are avoided, minimized, or mitigated in the permitting process. To help inform local decision-making about potential impacts to resources that extend beyond local boundaries, the Commission wrote to Governor Dayton in June of 2012 requesting further study in order to preserve the unique qualities of the region and to serve as a partner in this effort. To help the Commission illustrate their concerns, your packets include a map titled Potential Resources and Impact Areas for the Silica Sand Industry. This map is not all-inclusive. Please note that while impacts to the Great River Road may be similar to other Minnesota byways that are indicated on that map, we did not have ready access to the GIS data for the other byway resources. The map does include Great River Road GIS data from MnDOT's 2000 corridor management plan, overlaid with silica sand deposits and existing and proposed silica mines, transport, and processing facilities. A framework for assessing silica sand industry impacts and for refining its development to avoid, minimize, and mitigate impacts could include the Federal Highway Administration's National Scenic Byway intrinsic qualities. These include archaeological, natural, cultural, recreational, scenic, and historic. This framework organizes Minnesota's local, state, and federal investments that celebrate the river's intrinsic resources, resulting in a legacy of place and experience that should be examined with each permit application to assure that these investments are protected so that today's and tomorrow's residents and tourists can continue their enjoyment in a safe and welcoming environment. Archaeological resources are not mapped there on this map that we presented due to the sensitive nature of the resource, but a MnDOT assessment indicates that southeast Minnesota is a significant area for archaeological resources. Mapped natural resources include parks, forests, refuges, riverways, scientific natural areas, and wildlife management areas. Mapped cultural resources include some parks, refuges, riverways, and Amish byways, as well as museums, festivals, theaters, churches, and schools, which are not shown on the map. Scenic resources exist throughout the corridor. On the map, you will see transportation investments have preserved scenic views with significant scenic easements shown in yellow. Small wonder that last year, a Huffington Post poll named Wisconsin's Great River Road America's prettiest drive. After all, they are looking at Minnesota. Historic resources, as listed by SHPO, are eligible or on the National Register of Historic Places and indicated by blue diamonds. Towns like Red Wing, Lake City, Wabasha, and Winona have so many properties that the diamonds are stacked deep on the map. A National Register eligibility includes the historic intactness of the surrounding landscape. So permit review could include impacts to these historic sites themselves as well as those experienced from the site looking out. Map recreational resources includes parks, forests, refuges, riverways, and some scientific natural areas and wildlife management areas, as well as the byways and trails, Class 4 rest areas, and the Mississippi River Trail, a 10-state bicycle route. Following a priority set in MnDOT's 2000 Great River Road Corridor Management Plan, Minnesota's newest recreation resource is the Mississippi River Trail, and it's MnDOT's first state bikeway. It was established by State Statute 160.266 last session and is shown on the map as a red dash. The Mississippi River Trail relies primarily on state and county highway shoulders, sharing these roads with all users, but it also follows local roads and trails when available. Residents and touring bicyclists of all types will find their place on the Mississippi River Trail in Minnesota, and route signing will begin this year. Stretching 575 miles in Minnesota from the headwaters at Lake Itasca to the Iowa border, the Great River Road serves as a string upon which these local, state, and federal intrinsic pearls are explored. In addition to providing a resource-rich place for residents to live with high quality of life, the byway's critical mass of attraction yields returns supporting a vibrant tourism industry, an industry that in 2011 added 5,000 Minnesota jobs statewide.
Ms. Hoff, I hope you can wrap it up quickly because I know your Absolutely. Point is important, but we have lots of people yet. So.
Tourism impacts can also provide a framework for permit reviews, including cumulative Mississippi River landscape impacts from silica sand, CapEx 2020, and wind farm development. In closing, I want to thank you for the opportunity to submit this information to help you better understand the potential impact so as to assure permitting that results in sustainable growth for all sectors while protecting, enhancing, and promoting the Great River Road and its resources. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Zoff. And with that, we wrap up the agency's presentations on what their jurisdiction is and so on. And I think the complexity of this is obvious. We're now turning to the citizen testimony, and we had in talks with both sides, and again, there are more than two sides to this, but we decided to, in order to give some flexibility for some speakers who needed a little more time, the first five speakers are going to be lumped together, and they're going to have 20 minutes, and then the next four are going to be lumped together. They will also have 20 minutes. David Williams, Councillor Lynn Chain, Jody McIlrath, Jim Tittle, and Pat Popple, please come forward and go ahead in any shape or order you want to go. Please identify yourselves before you begin. We do have a timer. We're not meaning to be intrusive on this, but we want you to keep in mind that we do have very limited time. So thank you, and anybody who wants can go forward.
My name is David Williams. I'm a retired business lawyer living in rural Fillmore County in southeastern Minnesota. I'm an elected township officer, township supervisor for some 8 years. 2 years ago, many of us in southeastern Minnesota thought silica was just a mineral from which glass is manufactured. Over the last 2 years, all of us have learned much more about silica sand, the potential havoc it can cause in our communities. All of us are familiar with the small limestone quarries that dot our communities. We are their customers for road gravel, farm sand, and construction aggregate. But there is a huge difference between these small aggregate quarries that we welcome and the large industry-scale silica sand mining operations trying to make their way into our communities. These large sand mining projects are 100, 300, 500 acres and more. They propose to mine around the clock, 6 days a week. They want to consume large quantities of water from our aquifers to wash the mine sand. One proposed mine in my area submitted an application to the DNR to appropriate 198 million gallons of water per year. These mining operators want to haul sand from mining sites at the rate of hundreds of trucks daily from each mining site. I was a member of the Fillmore County Sand Mining Study Committee. I drafted the mining ordinance for Fillmore County that was approved by the county commissioners back in November. Mining supporters will argue that local government can resolve all these issues without state government intervention. They argue that state entry into the silica sand mining and processing arena would only duplicate what local government is already doing. They're wrong. There are substantial and independent reasons why state government involvement is justified and needed. Those reasons include the following. One, the vast and protected state-owned forest lands in southeastern Minnesota could be leased to mining operators for silica sand mining and processing. Local government can't control that activity, can't prevent it. Certainly, the DNR Minerals Division can and needs to be encouraged to not allow the leasing of state-owned lands, those vast forest lands in southeastern Minnesota, for the mining or processing of silica sand. The regs on both are different. The regulations for silica sand or industrial minerals are very different than the regulations for aggregate. I can understand the mining of aggregate on state-owned lands to help provide rock and gravel material for even our own state roads. Number two, there are numerous state highways in southeastern Minnesota that are strategic conduits for hauling this high-volume silica sand toward rail and barge destinations. many of these state highways run through small towns. I mean, dozens of small towns. These towns have no ability to manage and control traffic on these state highways, and so you end up with just a flood of all these mining trucks coming through these towns without any ability on the part of local government to manage it. It's simply uninvited, burdensome pass-through traffic. My county will charge 21.9 cents per ton per mile to silica sand mining operators for using our county roads. I would urge the state to consider doing something similar to repair and manage state highways. Local government agencies do not have the scientific ability to determine the potential adverse public health impacts from the use of flocculants and other chemicals to process extracted silica sand. The state agencies, though, have certainly the scientific skills and knowledge base to determine the adverse public health impact from the use of flocculants. Five, silica sand mining operators, as I indicated before, seek to consume large quantities of water from our regional aquifers and water tables just to wash the sand. Water appropriation and consumption is permitted and regulated by the DNR, but the standards are minimal, and the DNR must be pushed to develop more stringent water appropriation standards. Six, silicosis is an illness that can be caused by ambient particulates of silica sand blowing and moving around at mining sites. Local government does not have the scientific ability to determine if silica sand is being mined, processed, and transported in a manner that could cause substantial health problems of silicosis. The gentleman from the Department of Health indicated that they have been tasked by the PCA to try to develop a particulate standard, you know, of in the area of 4 or hopefully even 2.5, so that they can develop a standard that is enforceable by the PCA. This needs to be done. And finally, recent experiences seems to show that when local government decision makers cannot find answers to the questions about public health, environmental, transportation, and economic issues, these decision makers tend to freeze. They freeze in place and they make no effort to provide real solutions on the local level. They need the help, they need the scientific input from state agencies to even help them make decisions in addition to the decisions that they are making for themselves. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Williams.
My name is Lynn Shane. I'm the mother of 6 children. I work for my husband in his dental office when I'm not volunteering for a number of causes in my community. I am a new city council person for Wabasha, Minnesota. If you had asked me about frac sand a year ago, I wouldn't have been able to tell you much about it. But my Wisconsin friends invited me to come over to their neighborhoods and see for myself what was happening. I learned that frac sand businesses and owners use a certain rhetoric to make themselves seem more neighborly. I learned about deals that were being made behind closed doors. I saw promises of jobs and investments in the community while recruiting hard-to-replace local zoning officials away from their communities. I also learned that these same companies act like bullies when communities tried to hold them to local zoning that may not fit into their plans. Wabasha now has a frac sand transload facility developing in our industrial zone. Superior Silica Sands from Canada cut a deal with the Canadian Pacific Railroad so their business activities would fall under the federal preemption laws. Our conditional use permit has some conditions they have agreed to follow because they will be operating in our wellhead protection area. But our Planning Commission made some serious accommodations to pacify the company under the threat of a lawsuit. They are permitted to run 300 truckloads, which is 600 trips, during the weekdays. We have a second company asking for an additional 150 trucks. That would put the weekly total at 900 trips across the bridge between Minnesota and Wisconsin. This is an industry at odds with the economy of Wabasha. We are an historic Mississippi River town and proud home of the National Eagle Center, which sees over 100,000 visitors a year. Tourism-related business in Wabasha County generated over $1.5 million in taxes. We have over 700 jobs in the tourism industry in Little Wabasha County alone. We are part of the Great River Road. Thousands of bikers, antique cars, and bicyclists drive the loop around Lake Pepin, starting with the 100-mile garage sale in May and ending with Oktoberfest activities. We are known for our fishing tournaments, quaint B&Bs, gift shops, wonderful restaurants and breweries, and as a peaceful, safe place to experience the great Mississippi River and the stunning landscape that she has created. Our town consists of a lot of small businesses. Because of Wabasha's location to the interstate bridge, a major highway, and the rail system, many local businesses will be negatively impacted, including our hospital and clinic. One of my constituents explained our concern so eloquently at a recent town meeting. She said, "Why should my daycare business be any less important than the frac sand hauling business?" This conflict is real, and it is growing. Who can answer how many people will not choose to do business or vacation in Wabasha because they won't want to deal with the truck issues? How many Wisconsin residents won't continue their health needs in Wabasha or shop at our local grocery store or eat out at many of our fine restaurants? How many small businesses and the jobs they provide will be collateral damage? A town the size of Wabasha doesn't have the personnel to monitor the impacts of frac sand businesses. We're all concerned about our water and air quality. We have safety concerns from the volume of diesel trucks that will be rambling through our neighborhoods to get to the rails. We need a state permitting process in addition to our local conditional use permits to make sure we mitigate some of the damage that is sure to come our direction. We need a statewide moratorium so we can establish this permitting process. Beautiful little towns like Wabasha contribute to the high quality of life we have come to brag about here in Minnesota. The state needs to get involved now to help us protect our home, my home. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Shane. We have about 9 minutes left, and I know you have a short video in part of that, so please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Jody McElrath. I'm from Florence Township. I'm on the Planning Commission. I'm also the president of the Save the Bluff Citizens Group. I want to make one statement, and that is we have the best possible frac sand in the world in the worst possible place. And I can't imagine that anyone at any level would allow permitting until we know all the facts. I became very educated in frac sand beginning in May of 2011. We've joined and united with all the counties down the river, and we have educated ourselves and educated other communities. I also want to let you know that you have a handout in your packet that has our website on it, which is laden with literature, many, many reports, factual-based reports about how what we've learned so far. There are several health issues, obviously. Dr. Wayne Pearson sent a letter to each of you individually in your packets. He spent over 400 hours learning about frac sand, silicosis, the flocculants, and the excessive diesel fumes from frac sand substances. And I know that Hillary Carpenter from the Minnesota Department of Health has also spent a great deal of time investigating the same and learning about frac sand. OSHA regulates frac sand in the workplace, but there are no standards or regulations for outside of the workplace, the ambient dust particles that float through the air. And I think that our health is at stake here. We need a bill. Dr. Crispin Pierce in Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin, has done a great deal of work, and I think he was mentioned earlier, in air quality and monitored the plants around Eau Claire, I think, or Chippewa Falls, EOG, and found that there is ambient dust in the air up to a mile or greater that floats away from these sites in processing or mining. The states of California and Texas have established silica air standards. I think we need the same. Also, regarding water, millions of gallons of water per day obviously will be consumed with, and then polyacrylamides for washing. We're already facing a drought in Minnesota. We need to get smart about this. Also, many hundreds of thousands of dollars have been invested in cleaning up rivers and streams. We need to protect them by studying the issues and the potential impacts. Down in our area, we house 40% of the endangered species in the state, in southeastern Minnesota. We need MPCA to establish standards and to oversee the permitting on the frac sand mining. Socioeconomic impacts, almost $200 million in all the counties from Goodhue down to the border is accumulated through tourism business, as well as 5,400 jobs. What will happen to those when they're impacted by the sand mining companies? Those jobs could be replaced with temporary jobs that are totally dependent on the price of sand. Professor Stephen Deller, professor of Wisconsin economics, has also put together a report. It's on our website. But what he says is there's a flicker effect about the mining economy. There is no positive multiplier effect. People don't open hotels, restaurants, and merchants for the business of mining because they know it's going to go away. It's a boom-bust economy. There's documented proof of property value declines. There's a height report, Auburn University, that says if there's a home within a half mile of quarries, they can lose up to 30% of their value. That's lost tax revenue in our state. Agricultural soil, one of our most precious resources. According to Stephen Deller, and I quote him, agricultural land taken out of production for mining will take decades to return to productive use. What's the ultimate price our towns are going to pay for allowing these businesses to come in uncontrolled? We need state-level bipartisan action. We need to see the cumulative impacts of this for all of these involved counties, all the way down to the Iowa border. We need to calculate the snowball effect that can take place for water, health, roads, you name it, and also the potential tax revenue loss if we lose property values. The overarching requirement, we need a state moratorium, GEIS, MPCA standards and permitting so that the powers at the local level have more ability to maintain control of these establishments before they get permitted. I want to thank Senator Matt Schmidt, and I also want to thank Representative Tim Kelly for assisting us on these issues. And our health, safety, and welfare at stake, we need a bill. And now I'd like to introduce Mr. Jim Tittle, a filmmaker from St. Paul. Jim grew up in Red Wing and owns land near the site of a proposed frac sand mine in Goodhue County. He'd like to show you a brief excerpt from his movie, The Price of Sand, his new documentary.
Thank you, Ms. McBelver. I hope members of the committee can see it. I know some of this. Okay.
I was laying in bed and I heard this. What is that? Well, it was me. It was my breathing. Some days, almost, I would be coughing a lot. I couldn't, and I never had any cold symptoms. So I went out to my cousin's for a week in Pennsylvania, and all my symptoms went away. Came back a week later, and I wasn't even home a week, and the symptoms came back. And I went to my doctor, the pulmonary doctor, and he listened to my chest and looked at my throat and that, and he says, you have asthma due to your environment.
The chemical reactivity, the size and the shape of silica make it a particularly dangerous substance. It is regulated as a human carcinogen. It causes silicosis, it causes tuberculosis, causes problems with kidney disease, as well as other problems with the lung, like chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. According to studies on silicosis, we can get a certain amount, maybe up to about 3 micrograms per cubic meter, and we have no ill health effects. But above that level, So if we have agricultural dust as well as dust coming from a sand plant, we may be above that threshold, and then we may begin to see the scarring and the progression of disease associated with silica exposure.
We are some of the newest people in the neighborhood. I have gotten to know my neighbors a little bit better through this, but then I've also seen a lot of for sale signs go up around the neighborhood. Like, everybody just wants to take off and run. It's each man for himself. Let's get out of here. Of course, their houses are not selling, so they're still here. And, you know, we talk about the feelings. Nobody wants a mine right across the street.
I know there are questions of how far this stuff will travel, but when you're living right next to it and right next to the railheads that are hauling it, it's obvious that some of this dust is going to get into people's homes.
I just wish they would determine the safety of this stuff before they would put it across the street from a neighborhood that's full of children, or any neighborhood for that matter.
You can read it. You can go to OSHA, you can go to MSHA, you know, the Mine Safety Agency, and they clearly tell you what crystalline silica does, the effects that it has on people who breathe it in the workplace. They have controls that people have to take within these mines to make sure that these people do not get sick. Who's protecting the people that live right outside the mine?
My breathing. Some days, all of a sudden, I would be coughing a lot. I couldn't breathe, and I never had any cold symptoms. So I went out to my cousin's for a week.
Okay. They ran about a minute over. We'll let the other side get its 20, or should we just continue an extra? How many more minutes were left in this video, can I ask?
Oh, that's it.
That's it. Okay, thank you.
I'm going to speak with this group.
Okay, we will, if the other side is okay with it, why don't you go first and spend, please, less than 2 minutes, and then we'll let the other side go extra couple minutes as well. Thank you.
I'm Patricia Poppel, 561 Summit Avenue in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. I come to testify basically because I've worked with so many of these people over the last several years. I have been engaged in the frac sand mining issues in Chippewa County for the last 5 years, and I have studied it extensively. I think that the entire scene of hydraulic fracturing, of frac sand mining and processing, and the transload or intermodal locator transport of sand is not a pretty scene. It creates a heavy industrial footprint, and throughout the entire region, not just Wisconsin, but Minnesota, and the entire region expands out. This is really heavy industrial mining at its best, and certainly affects many more people than just the local people. One of the statements that I just want to make, and I know that you've been busy at this for today for a lengthy period of time, the precautionary principle, in essence, is something that everyone needs to remember. It states that if there is a chance of harm being done either to people or the environment from an activity, and there is not enough scientific consensus or research, then policymakers should err on the side of caution and preclude the activity or heavily regulate it. It is a sensible approach, but one which is all too often discarded in the United States for the simple reason that lobbyists in Washington and the state capitals have exceedingly deep pockets. Nevertheless, in some places like the European Union, the precautionary principle is now a statutory part of law, and it should be. I just want to state many of the statements that have been made here I would concur with, but one of the pieces that I just want to alert you to is that in Wisconsin we have had numerous spills from several mines. Not all are reported. In fact, most of them are, all of them, I think, that have been reported by citizens. a flood at the EOG plant in Chippewa Falls while it was under construction. In Grantsburg, the Tiller Corporation poured all kinds of things into the St. Croix River, and that is now under litigation, an investigation by the Attorney General and other agencies. In the Larkin Valley near Blair, Wisconsin, there was a major breach. A 5-foot wall of water and sludge took out an Amish barn and other buildings. Fortunately, no one was killed. Again, that one is under major investigation. In Trout Creek in Chippewa County, also reported by a citizen, a wastewater pond gave way and spilled into the creek. The land conservation in Chippewa County helped clean up. The fine by the county of a little over $4,100 will never pay to recover that creek and the fish and trout that are in it. No citations or fines by the DNR. They arrived late, and the site had already been cleaned up, so no problem. In Beaver Creek and the McKenzie Swamp in Barron County, there have been several spills. Citizens have reported it. A citation was given, but no fines. And there are others. I will end my remarks because I know you have a shortened.
Thank you very much, Ms. Popple. And with that, we'd like to start with Minnesota Industrial Sand Council and Tiller Corporation, Jordan Sands, and Brian Rock, and we'll give you 25 minutes. Welcome to the committee, and I'll just have you introduce yourselves as you go. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committees. I'm Fred Corrigan, Executive Director of the Aggregate and Ready Mix Association of Minnesota, a statewide association representing aggregate and ready mix producers. The Minnesota Industrial Sand Council is a council of our association. Our association and its members has worked with the legislature since 1950 to clarify the regulation of the aggregates industry, including industrial sand. Most recently, the industry worked with the Legislative Aggregate Task Force, which reported to the legislature in 2000. That report included many recommendations. Local governments have been charged by the legislature in statute 84.94 to regulate this industry and have done so very effectively. That experience should make the legislature comfortable that local government will be able to continue to regulate the aggregate industry, including industrial sand, and does not need a statewide moratorium or a generic EIS that will surely impact the entire aggregates industry and threaten existing operations and the property rights of those with aggregate reserves, including the companies that you'll hear from today. I also wanted to mention, Mr. Chair, that the report to the legislature in 2000 recommended an increase in the local option aggregate tax that was put in effect by the legislature in 2010 to provide adequate resources to those counties and cities or towns hosting an aggregate facility. In 2012, 31 counties collected over $6.1 million, with 42.5% going to the counties, 42.5% going to local government, and 15% to local reclamation and other local environments. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving us the opportunity to talk today.
Thank you, Mr. Corrigan.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Peter Larson. I'm from Larkin Hoffman Law Firm, and as Mr. Corrigan explained, I'm here for the Aggregate and Ready Mix Association and the Minnesota Industrial Sand Council. I just have a simple job, and that's to describe who the Minnesota Industrial Sand Council is. You've got some materials in your packet. It's, I think, topped maybe by this green sheet that says Minnesota Industrial Sand Council. You can see the philosophy of the Minnesota Industrial Sand Council at the top. This group was formed just in January. A group of companies who were reading the paper, as were you, hearing that there might be some discussion at the legislature this year on this issue. And I'd say that they deserve some credit for not sitting back, and I think it was in the paper yesterday about the Twins thinking that hope is not a strategy. They've decided to come up here and participate in this process, which is not an easy thing to do. I hope you appreciate for a company who is rather just be doing what you're going to hear from them. You can see that they represent Jordan Sands from Mankato, Merriam Junction from Shakopee, along with Brian Rock, Mankato, Kasota Stone, Tiller Corporation, and Barton Industrial Sands. I'm going to come up later with Kirsten Pauly, who's going to talk to you a little bit about regulatory issues, which is another one of my specialties, to answer any questions you have. So with that, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we're going to have our members come up and talk to you a little bit about their businesses.
Thank you very much, Mr. Larson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Honorable chairs, members of the Senate and House, thank you for taking time to hear us today. My name is Mike Cairn. I'm with Tiller Corporation, and with me today is Christina Morrison, who works with me in our Land Use Affairs Department, and also with me is Chad Sauer, our president and CEO. We're here to give you some of our history as well as tell you our story relating to silica sand, and then finally give you our perspective on the existing permitting structure. With that, I think I'll let Chad talk about our history in the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. As Mike said, my name is Chad Sauer. I'm the president and CEO of Tiller Corporation. I am a second-generation owner-operator, and we have been family-owned and operated since 1946. Our predecessor company was called Barton Contracting Company, and they got started during the Eisenhower Interstate System and basically constructed many, many, many of the interstate highways that we all travel on today. It's often been said that anybody that's traveling on an interstate highway in Minnesota was constructed originally by Barton Contracting. As the interstate highway construction was wrapping up and nearing completion, our company shifted focus from a contracting company to more of a material supply, which we are today, to a lot of the highway construction, building construction and trades, and a lot of the aggregate that's needed for building. Tiller Corporation was founded in 1981 as a holding company for our three operating divisions, Barton Sand and Gravel Company, which Barton Contracting turned into, Commercial Asphalt, which we have a dozen asphalt plants around the Twin City metro area supplying products to local roads, highways, driveways, and the such, and Barton Enterprises, Inc., which is an oil storage facility down on the Mississippi River. Today, Tiller Corporation and its divisions, we've added a new division over the last year, and that's why we're here, and that's Barton Industrial Sands. In addition to our dozen hot mix plants, our sand and gravel, our 20-plus sand and gravel mines, and our tank farm, we employ about 250 people, good quality, sustainable living jobs, you know, send your kids to college type jobs, and we anticipate with our new operation to employ an additional 50. So with that, I can answer any questions if there are any during the period. If not, I'll turn back to Mike. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sauer.
Again, we want you to realize that we understand our mining is a temporary land use. We have to anticipate what's going to happen with that property, and we need to make sure that we're designing our sites to accommodate that use as we move forward. In the past and in the future, we are committed to working with the communities, and we strive to be a partner within those. Part of our story, again, as Chad stated, we began processing silica sand back in 2010. We looked at this as a great chance to expand our company. Our employees were excited. Again, in 2010, our sales were down, and everybody thought, hey, this is a great way for us to have jobs again and to get back to work. We started our industrial sand division, and recently we received the permits necessary to operate our facility in North Branch. That facility is designed to receive, dry, and sort the silica sand. And to be quite honest, our path to obtain those final permits was not uncomplicated. We started out with finding the potential site, visited with the city. We were told by the city that that this was something that they were looking to have put into their industrial zone. It fit with their comprehensive plan and their zoning. They did request that we do some street improvements to handle our truck traffic, and we worked with the county engineer to mitigate some of the concerns that the county had on the county highway system. Most recently, in response to concerns from the citizen, we are funding a study that the county is directing to help address other concerns that might come about because of our facility. Our process, we did go through several public hearings as well as some variances, and all of those were vetted through the public hearing process, and we did meet with our closest neighbors and businesses in that process. After the hearings, we started going through the process of our air quality permit with the MPCA. As part of that process, the PCA held a public meeting in North Branch, and after that meeting, the city signed a letter by the mayor and each council member supporting our project, and that is in your packet as page number 2. Again, this is a pretty strong statement from that city that they were welcoming us as a business. We understand you're looking at some options to address citizen concerns, and we understand that these options include the GEIS as well as a possible moratorium. Again, as Chad mentioned, we've got several sand and gravel mining sites. We were involved in EISs in the city of Elk River that encompassed 1,800 acres. Our Maple Grove study encompassed something over 1,500 acres. The Empire EIS in Dakota County encompassed over 2,000 acres. And so with our experience that we have in these permitting processes, we don't believe that there's anything generic about any of the facilities or the processing. They're each unique, and each of them should be studied on their own so that all of the local issues and concerns can be dealt with rather than on a more generic form. Again, as I've said in the past, we've tried to work with the local units of government, and we feel that they are best suited to decide the local land issues. We think that the state is doing an excellent job and is well situated to impose conditions on individual permits to adequately address the public. As recently as evidenced in recently issued permits, the state is asking us to conduct ongoing monitoring as well as ongoing noise studies so that the concerns that have been expressed by the public can be addressed. And with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you very much. Were you going to speak as well?
I'll stand by their comments. Thanks.
Thank you. With that, we'll move to Jordan Sands next. There are about 12 and a half, a little more than that, left. Welcome to the committee. Please go in whatever order you wish. But identify yourselves for committee members.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we thank you for taking time to hear us today. My name is Scott Sustichek. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Jordan Sands. With me today, and we are part of Coughlin Companies, and with me today is our owner, Bob Coughlin, our Director of Project Development, Brett Skillbred, and our Director of Human Resources, Julie Freed. Really, the Coughlin Company's story began about 125 years ago and is one of a long-standing entrepreneur in this state. It began mining dimensional limestone in the quarries around Mankato. And, in fact, Bob's grandfather is responsible for all that good-looking limestone out in the corridors. And so the business was really started and built on limestone mining. It has since grown to encompass Coffin Quarries, Capstone Publishing, which is an international children's book publishing business, and now Jordan Sands. When I first joined Coffin Companies, the charge I had from Jim and Bob right away was, you know, we build good businesses here, we build them the right way, and we build them in ways that give back to our community. And I can think of no better way to show you this than two recent awards that Coughlin was given. One is the Keystone Award for philanthropy, corporate philanthropy, as 2012 mid-sized company. And then just a week ago in Mankato was named the Large Business of the Year by the Mankato United Way. And so these are pieces that encompass our culture as an organization of who we are and how we go about our business. That filtered into everything we've done in and around developing our sand business, which is really a growth from the economic recession, which really significantly impacted our limestone business. Obviously, underneath the limestone quarries is some high-quality silica sand. And so we set about figuring out ways that we could mine and process this sand and get it to market and begin creating jobs again. We did that by looking at areas where we felt the impact would be minimal. We purchased additional land in an industrial park where our neighbors will be a large-scale incinerator, an active landfill, other mines and quarries, as well as a large metal recycling plant. And we are actually going to be a very small producer. We are only intending to mine under our current EAW 70 acres. And so we are starting small and looking to grow. We also focused on air quality because we knew that was a big issue. And so we voluntarily put our program in an ambient air monitoring project. And that came with our permits, both our EAW and the air quality permit that we submitted to the MPCA just prior to the Christmas holiday. The other thing that we did is we made an agreement with the city of Mankato, who wants to embark on a very ambitious water reuse program. And by capturing this water, again, lengthening the time that we can utilize resources. And so when we mine one of our quarries, we'll be reclaiming it and donating it to the city for a water reuse holding pond, again, allowing them to better utilize this water in an efficient way. In total, I think, you know, Minnesota, the issues with silica mining here are no different than issues that have been faced before in mining. And Minnesota knows mining. Certainly the Mankato area has had industrial sand mining for almost 40 years, large-scale industrial sand mining. This area knows mining, and it knows how to regulate it. And we have invested significant dollars, significant time in building our business there and trying to get it started. We're an entrepreneur, and that's what we do. What we would like is to be able to continue to work closely with our state, local, and federal officials in developing this project and bringing it forward and creating the jobs that the Greater Mankato Growth Council has indicated, you know, 70 jobs, good-paying jobs, as were indicated earlier, and an additional $100 million in revenue annually to the Mankato economy. Greater Mankato Growth has said they see 2 to 3 projects of this type per year, see them, much less bring them to fruition. And we would very much like to bring this one forward and start growing in Mankato. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sussex. Thank you all. Next, we have Brian Rock. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, and we appreciate the chance to talk, honorable chairs and members of the committee. I'd love to sit and tell you all about Brian Rock Products, but time is at the essence here, and Kirsten Pauley has some really good information for you people. I'll just tell you a real quick story on us. Is we've been mining in Minnesota for 70 years, a family-owned company. We're currently in Washington County and Scott County. Scott County, where we've been mining the red rock for over 60 years, and underneath that red rock is silica sand. And so we've gone and formed with the Melkerson family a project called Merriam Junction Sands. Earlier, there was a discussion that there was some of the best sand in the worst place. We feel we have some of the best sand in the best place. It's a mining district, rail right online, and everything is in place. Mining has been going on for 60 years. And with that, I'll turn it over to Kirsten.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you for the opportunity to testify today. A little background about myself. My name is Kirsten Pauly. I'm a registered geologist and a registered civil engineer with Sunday Engineering, a civil and environmental consulting firm located in Bloomington, Minnesota. In a few months, I'll be marking my 30th year with the company. And during those past 30 years, I have been involved in the aggregate mining industry to a large degree, working on environmental review, mine planning, and permitting. More recently, with the increase in interest in industrial sand, I've been working on industrial sand projects located in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and some other states as well. I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Industrial Sand Council. The focus of my testimony is to talk about the existing state standards and controls that are applicable to the industrial sand mining industry. There's been a lot of talk that if the legislature does not stop or slow down the process, these sites will continue to be permitted, unregulated, and uncontrolled. Industrial sand falls into a category of non-metallic mineral mining. It also includes aggregates, construction sand and gravel, limestone, dimension stone quarries. And these types of mining operations have been operating for decades and decades successfully in Minnesota in a regulated, effective fashion. So the industrial sand mining operations come into a system that has established rules and regulations. In addition to several federal regulations, the state agencies oversee areas of environmental regulation, and these agencies have developed the regulations, enforceable standards, and permitting requirements with the goals of protecting our air, water, and quality of life. You've heard today from many of these departments, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, the Department of Natural Resources, Department of Health, the Environmental Quality Board, Board of Soil and Water Resources, as well as the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And I think these agencies did an excellent job in describing the roles that their state agencies have in permitting and regulating industrial sand mining operations. Beyond these state agencies, there may be additional permitting requirements from local authorities. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers can be involved in permitting, as well as local watershed districts or local road authorities, as well as, of course, local land use permits from the county, the city, or the township that issue a conditional use permit or an industrial use permit for a facility. I'm going to briefly go through, as time allows, some of the important permits that the state agencies issue and try to give you some examples of how far-reaching these regulations actually are. You heard from Commissioner Stein that the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency regulates stationary source emissions, state ambient air standards, water quality standards for protection of waters and the state of the state. They have and administer a stormwater regulatory program, above-ground storage of liquid substances, and rules related to noise. The probably the most important that we hear a lot about is the air quality and the air emissions permit that the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency oversees. The program is very comprehensive. There's a number of different permits that may be pertinent to a facility. There are the individual permits that have recently been issued to Tiller Corporation, our Great Plains Sands, are permits that are issued to facilities that mine and process and have dryers. The individual air emissions permit process is very lengthy. It typically takes between 6 months and a year to obtain a permit. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, in my opinion, would not be issuing these permits if there was some imminent threat to the welfare of adjacent residents. As an example, this document is a double-sided document. This is the recently issued air emissions permit for Tiller Corporation's drying facility up in North Branch. It's over 100 pages of permit itself and over 200 pages of technical support information within this document. A couple of the very key components of the air emissions permit is that this permit, as well as the one issued to Great Plains Sands in Scott County last year, both contain ambient air monitoring plans and fugitive dust control plans. And these are very important elements of the air emissions permits. The Industrial Sand Council supports ambient air quality monitoring, which includes monitoring not only for the particulate matter that we have ambient air quality standards for, but also for silica, in an attempt to gather as much information as possible and assist the state as they decide whether or not to adopt ambient air quality standards for silica. It should also be noted that these air emission permits can be reopened by the department, by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, if in fact the state adopts new standards or more stringent requirements. The fugitive dust control plan is important because mining has been around, as I've indicated, for many, many decades, and the dust sources from a mining operation are well documented, and the control measures to reduce fugitive dust emissions are also standard operating procedures for mining operations. And these dust control plans get very specific about where potential dust emissions may occur, how an operator visually monitors and physically monitors for proper moisture content and other measures to make sure that the dust emissions are regulated. And also,
you can finish up your thoughts. Go
okay.
ahead. Just very briefly.
Has control measures for making sure that the dust is controlled. And these go hand in hand with the ambient air monitoring to make sure that these measures are actually effective and working. And so I understand that I need to wrap things up. And I guess I would like to do so by just stating that these state standards, rules, regulations, and required permits that we've just discussed and been discussing today constitute regulation and control of industrial sand mining and processing facilities that currently exist within the state today. All of these state standards have been developed with the goal of protecting and preserving our environment and the health, safety, and welfare of our citizens while preserving sustainable industry and jobs for the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And from now, I'm going to call the next several witnesses, and if you can, two or three can come up at a time. We're going to ask people to please try and hold their remarks to 2 minutes apiece. I know the House members may have to leave around 2 o'clock. The Senate can continue a bit further. But we will ask you, Tom Rowenkamp, then Jim McElrath, and Jim Drost, call you three up first. And please try and hold. We do have a timer. I don't like to be the enforcer. I like you to try and restrict your comments. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Rowenkamp.
Rowenkamp, yes.
Please go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for letting me speak. I'm not as big as everybody else around here. My name is Tom Rowenkamp. I am a contractor for David and Sherry's proposed mine site. For the past 20 years, I have operated Rowenkamp Trucking, and also for the last 20 years have been in construction, road work, and local hauls for farmers in southeastern Minnesota. On 2012, I formed a partnership with Ivy Popowell and formed a company called IT Sand in the anticipation of being able to mine the Nesbitt site. The site for David and Sherry Nesbitt's proposed conditional use permit is 19.2 acres of land. This is very small compared to other proposed sites in southeastern Minnesota and other sites proposed for mining in Minnesota. Our proposal, put quite simply, is to lower a hill that is surrounded by cropland. The site will be lowered by 75 to 80 feet, and in doing so, 19.2 acres will still be higher in elevation than the cropland that's around it. Our intentions were to find a site that, when completed, people have a hard time finding again. The site will not be farmed, and it will return back to prairie and seeded with whatever the county recommends. In doing so, this 19.2 acres of land will filter water as it has for millions of years. We started this effort with the thought of providing bedding sand for farmers and construction sand for Winona County. We are still trying to provide sand for the same purpose. For the past 20 years, I have been providing sand locally for local farmers and construction. If we are unable to provide local sand, costs for local farmers, farming use, and construction will increase, putting an undue expense on local industries. We are also planning on selling sand for the oil and gas industries. That's no secret. Saratoga Township is of higher quality in some sand than some sands in Wisconsin. The difference between Saratoga Township and Wisconsin, our sand is close to the surface and at an elevation that keeps mining far from groundwater.
Mr. Lohenkamp, please try and wrap it up now quickly if you can.
All right. We have complied with all the demands Winona County has asked of us, even to the point of paying a road usage fee, even though no other industries do. Air monitoring, dust control, noise control, and truck traffic are concerns for us also. We have always felt the need to work with public, and it has never been our intention to do otherwise. I am a local person trying to do a local business and still protect the local people.
Thank you, Mr. Rohlkamp. Jim McElrath?
Yeah, Jim McElrath.
McElrath,
that's okay. I'm from Frontenac, Minnesota, and I'm a board supervisor for Florence Township. And I'm speaking to you today about the questionability of the integrity of some of the frac sand mining companies. And the operative word there is some. And for the following reasons. 2 years ago when we first got involved in this and been studying it since, Windsor Permian came down to Hay Creek Township outside of Red Wing, and they bought 155 acres of land for possibly mining frac sand. And we wonder, you know, why 155 acres? Normally land is sold by sections, 160 to 320 or whatever. Well, 160 acres triggers an automatic EIS. So right away the antenna went up to say, you know, this isn't looking so good, so we might take more of a look. The next thing we find out is that they're contacting some of our neighbors and they're offering upfront generous non-disclosure contracts for purchasing the land and just keeping it quiet. So the antenna went up a little higher. Then the construction of substandard holding ponds that ruptured in Wisconsin, and I won't repeat those because you just heard them, and the companies here, the whole thing is they don't come up and say, geez, we had a mistake. We'll fix this and take care of it. They don't say anything. A hiker had to figure out the one for the Tiller Mine in Grantsburg. To me, that's not upfront good business practices. That's flying under the radar. Well, there were six spills over there. And that spill in Grantsburg went right in the most pristine river, one of the most pristine rivers in the world, St. Croix. I don't think that's right. So that takes care of the spills. Superior Sand Company from Canada hired Paul Van Igel, and he was a county zoning administrator for 11 years, and he was responsible for preparing sand mine permits for the county in Buffalo County, Wisconsin. Now he is the land acquisition manager for Superior Mines. Superior Sand also threatened to sue City of Wabasha for over $30,000 a day, and they demonstrated a checkbook with a huge amount of money in it for lawyers' fees. So they threatened basically the city council.
Mr. McElrath, please do wrap up now. Thank you.
Okay. Whole point here is that some of these companies are just not up front, and maybe you can't throw all the apples in the same barrel, but these companies need to be monitored, and you wouldn't have to defend your vote to vote for a moratorium because of their business behavior and their low ethics, and you just wouldn't have to defend your vote. They've earned it themselves. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Jim Drost, and while he is speaking, we'll, if Sigrid Anderson and Amy Nelson can come to the table as well. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Senators and Representatives. I am Jim Drost from Stillwater, Minnesota. I hold a bachelor's and master's degrees in mining and metallurgical engineering, and thank you for inviting us. I own a family farm in Barron County, Wisconsin. A year ago, two frac sand companies set up shop at the beginning of the marsh, covering 1,500 acres with a creek running through the marsh and the farm. If you have letters forward today, the pictures show the muddy wastewater that has been dumped into Beaver Creek and McKeesey Marsh. If frac sand mining in Minnesota goes without careful statewide regulations, they are but a microcosm of what you will see all over Minnesota. The marsh and the creek have already been severely compromised, and the frac sand areas in Minnesota will suffer the same fate if care is not taken to give Minnesota time to learn about frac sand mining. But equally important, the state needs to give its citizens support, which has not been happening in Wisconsin. We need at least 1 year statewide moratorium. The mining companies involved are very crafty and beguile many local officials with visions of sugar plums and ply them with the idea that they will be good neighbors. They use more euphemistic terms in presenting a beautiful picture of prosperity than most of us have in our entire vocabulary. Wash water for wastewater, bumping for blasting are just two examples. Please be advised that Chippewa and Barron counties in Wisconsin are already suffering losses of business and jobs related to the tourist industry because of frac sand mining. Minnesota, too, has many places that frac sand mining activities should never be allowed. There will be losses in farmland, clean water, and air, general health, businesses, and land values, etc. In conclusion, the losses related to the mining of frac sand will dwarf any benefits gained by the mining of the sand.
Thank you, Mr. Drost. Thank you. Sigrid Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Sigrid Anderson. I live in Lake Township near Lake City in Wabasha County. Thank you for the opportunity to speak at this hearing today. In the interest of time, I'll amend my comments. Last summer, after 8 months of research of silica sand mining issues and practices, monitoring of mining company strategies, organizing small and large group meetings, fruitless hours spent in county government sessions, it became clear to many of us that local and county government agencies and officials do not have the background, training, technical expertise, time, staff, or monetary resources to adequately respond to the power and skill of mining companies backed by multinational energy corporations and the implied consent of federal agencies. I joined with a small group who took on the task of creating and submitting an 18-page petition for a generic environmental impact statement for silica sand mining in Minnesota. In signing this petition, we expressed our belief that the state of Minnesota has a significant role and responsibility to its citizens and subsidiary governments to investigate, define, and establish fundamental standards and rules for sand mining in Minnesota. The impacts of silica sand mining operations cross a broad range of disciplines and geologic, governmental, and temporal boundaries. The evidence from western Wisconsin suggests that silica sand mining, as practiced, there is neither cooperative nor complementary to communities, existing businesses, farming, tourism, public health and welfare, or the natural environment. Industrial scale sand mining is not a good fit for our region. We are concerned that our groundwater will be depleted and contaminated, that our farmlands will be disrupted by permanent open pits that cannot be restored to productivities, that our roads and bridges will be overwhelmed and damaged beyond repair, and that our children will be put at risk of asthma and silicosis. That and the natural communities of plants and animals will be broken up, and that our streams will no longer sustain their trout. We are worried that communities in southeastern Minnesota and for many, our livelihoods, our homes, and our future way of life are threatened. The international energy corporations are arguably the wealthiest and most powerful in the world. We are learning now that these corporations plan to export the gas and oil that they produce by the hydraulic fracturing process. We urge you to legislate for a generic impact statement, environmental impact statement for silica sand mining in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Before Ms. Nelson goes, I'll call up Vince Reddy and Kelly Stanage. Welcome to the committee. And by the way, for witnesses and so on, I know the House committee time ends at 2. They're certainly welcome to stay, and we welcome them to do so if possible. But if there are some committee members leaving, I hope people recognize that. Ms. Nelson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. My name is Amy Nelson. I live in Hay Creek Township, which is adjacent to Red Wing and Goodhue County. I think it's important that you understand what one township has been through, and that might help you understand what's happening at the local level. We ended up learning about this whole thing in February 2011 by a notice in the paper, and a neighbor happened to see it, and that's the 155 acres that's been talked about. What you may not know is that is adjacent to a residential development. It is on a bluff. It has two watersheds running through it that go into Hay Creek, which is a state trout stream that runs into the Mississippi. So that's how we learned about it. Through our research, we learned that in 2010, the parent company who purchased this land ended up saying in their quarterly report that they found 20 million tons of sand in Minnesota. As we have learned, that bluff property, along with one other location in Frontenac, which we think is used for loading, are the only two properties they have in Minnesota. So 20 million tons of sand. So we fought for local legislation. We fought after spending 7 months, $500, and getting a couple hundred signatures on a petition. We got a moratorium. Great. We went to the township level. At the township level, we surveyed the people who live there. And in that township survey, 91% wanted to protect the township's scenic character, 90% want to protect agriculture, and 80% do not want industrial sand mining. So the local township ended up writing a zoning ordinance over the last year. They did a great job. Last Wednesday, that planning commission received a standing ovation. Next month, we vote on a zoning ordinance. The problem is that zoning ordinance may not last. The reason is because big oil companies have lots of money. We're talking about an oil company here that is part of the hedge fund. We aren't talking about a local family-run agency that everybody knows. We're talking about somebody from Oklahoma, and if you end up following it back, it ends up going into LLCs. So what we'd like from you is three things. Protect our roads. Help us get the money to protect our roads. We would like you to protect our water because these wells use as much as the city of Red Wing in one day. And we would like you to protect our air. We want standards against the 2.5 micron silica dust that causes silicosis. That's what we want standards for. And if you can do that, you can protect us. If you don't, we'll lose against the multi-million dollar operations.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson. Mr. Reddy.
Thanks for listening to us today, Senator Marty and the committee members. My name is Vince Reddy. I'm a registered nurse, and I raise livestock in Saratoga Township, Minnesota. This is a farming community just south of St. Charles, Minnesota. My family's lived in this area for 35 years. I've never been to the state capitol prior to today. I believe that the issue of frac sand mining is important, and that's why I'm here today. The township where I live is a proposed site of 7 sand mines within an area that's approximately 2 miles by 5 miles. The first EAW is for 3 mine proposals, comprise a total of about 130 acres. Each of those 3 mines would generate from 300 to 600 truck trips each day. The mining process involves blasting pieces of earth-moving equipment, lighting, sifting, sorting from 6 a.m. until 10 p.m. year-round. And the companies estimate that there's a minimum of a 20-year supply of silica sand. These mine proposals are in addition to a washing plant proposal right near St. Charles, Minnesota, as to be the largest such facility in the United States. Last Friday, I drove a journalist around my area for about 2 hours touring the proposed mining sites. In 2 hours, we passed three other vehicles on a weekday. We drove past dozens of Amish and English farms, many cattle, horses, hundreds of acres of productive farmland, and the families that live here in a safe, healthy, productive environment. If the proposed mines start their enterprise here, our environment and our resources are changed forever. What was a scenic, safe farming community will become a heavily industrialized area. I visited the mine sites that are in production in Wisconsin. I've seen the actual practice of silica production. I'm very concerned about our quality of life, the quality of our resources. A vast majority of the people in our community have signed a petition to arrest the progress of the industry. We want to see a statewide moratorium on silica sand mining in Minnesota. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Reddy. Ms. Stanage.
Yes, thank you. I'm Kelly Stanage. I have a statement here from the chair of the Board of Commissioners in Houston County that I'd like to read. His name is Justin Zimieski. I've been working with Commissioner Zimieski and many others in Houston County on the county's frac sand study committee, and we've been struggling for about a year now to figure out how we can keep this industry from causing the destruction we've seen in Wisconsin. Commissioner Zimieski regrets he couldn't be here in person, as he had to be at a county board meeting at which they will be considering extending a moratorium in Houston County. He's written a letter, and I'll read some key portions. Dear chairs and committee members, I believe it is critical that the legislature act on this issue of industrial-scale silica sand mining, processing, and transportation this legislative session. Houston County is using its zoning powers we have to control this industry through local ordinances, including moratoriums. But many of the potential negative impacts of this industry cannot be addressed by ordinances at the county level. Houston County does not have the staff or expertise to set pollution standards for water and air quality. That must be done by a state agency like the MPCA. To protect our state from the harm that the frac sand industry has caused in Wisconsin, I believe you must pass legislation that accomplishes these goals. Number one, establish Minnesota Pollution Control Agency permits for frac sand mining, transportation, and processing that protects air and water quality. Number two, order a generic environmental impact statement that will help in establishing state permitting standards and to better understand the potential impact of the industry on the region and how it can be addressed. Number three, enact a state-level moratorium on any new industrial silica sand facilities that allows time to create MPCA permits and complete a GEIS. Governor Dayton had it right when he said about the frac sand industry in Minnesota, "I don't want it to be like feedlots where the industry got ahead of government. Unless you take quick action on the above three items, this is exactly what will happen to the citizens of Houston County and others throughout Minnesota." Thank you very much.
Thank you. That was from the county board.
That was from Justin Zimieski, the Houston County Board of Commissioners. He is the chair of that board. And I just found out this morning that all five county commissioners also signed that letter this morning at their meeting.
Thank you. You might get that letter to us if you want.
Yes, you should have it, actually.
Okay.
I've got the letter.
Okay. Thank you. We have the letter signed by him, apparently, so. You're not Mr. Mann, Mr. King, yes?
I was with.
What?
No, I'm on there with Vince.
Oh, okay. Please go quickly.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, my name is Bobby King. I'm with the Land Stewardship Project. I wanted to cover 3 points quickly. First is that the non-metallic mining standards that have been talked about were developed before the industry in its current form existed. The silica sand industry that is here now is different than anything that we've seen before.
And for Southeast Minnesota, like David pointed out, it's going to be operations that run 6 days a week, around the clock, much larger. This is like the feedlot issue. We had standards for feedlots, and then the industry dramatically changed where we had large confinement operations, and we tried to apply standards made for smaller operations to them, and it did not work. So we need to get in front of it and develop those standards now. the other point I wanted to address was the issue of state permitting and local control. Those go together, and large-scale feedlots are an example. Large-scale feedlots get a pollution permit from the PCA. They monitor the pollution. They're in charge of the pollution. Local units of government do land use issues, compatibility, setbacks, that type of stuff, and they're fully equipped to do that. But they, I think more and more local government officials and local governments are saying they want help with this aspect of it, and they need stronger action from the state. I've got a letter signed by about six county commissioners, some Wabasha officials, and township officials from Southeast Minnesota calling for a GEIS, a moratorium, and specifically saying establish state regulations and permit requirements for industrial-scale silica sand mining that would serve as a floor. These state-level requirements should not preclude local land use ordinances. The concept of the state establishing a floor that local government can go beyond is how many other industrial-scale businesses are regulated in Minnesota, including large-scale feedlots, ethanol facilities, and solid waste facilities. And that's signed by was signed by five county commissioners, three city officials, and 11 township officers. But as Ms. Stanich just said, Justin Stanich passed it around. Commissioner Stanich passed it around at the Houston County Board this morning, and they all signed it. So I'd like to pass it around because I think this is indicative of the help that local units of government need from the state. Lastly, I want to say about a generic environmental impact statement. The two that have been done previously did not work well. To make this one work well, there's two differences that can make it work well. One is that we will do it before the industry has established itself. And secondly, we have to do it with a moratorium. And if not, it won't be useful. But if we do it with that, it can be useful. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Robert Mann. Then I'll call up the next two as well, Jason George and Tony Quillis. Again, because we have such a long list, and I don't think time does not make it likely that we will finish the list, I'm going to suggest that people who wish to have their comments sent to the committees, if you send them to our office, we'll make sure that both Chair Hortman and the House members and our own committee members get whatever you provide us on this if you're not able to testify, because we do want to hear from people. We unfortunately do not have enough time. Mr. Mann? No, he's not here. Maybe. Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, George, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and thank you for the time for allowing me to comment today in support of the industrial sand industry. Mr. Chairman, that is an industry that's been in place, as you've heard, for over 100 years in this state, and some of the facilities in this state are on their second and third generation family owners. I just wanted to point out also that this industry has been, it's been talked about that this industry is dealing with sand that in the end is used in some cases for hydraulic fracking. But I also wanted to point it out that sand from some of these facilities is also being used for abrasives. It's being used for filtration systems. It's in the windshield of our cars. It's in our it's in our tubs. It's in our sinks. And if you're as bad a golfer as I am, a lot of times, much to my chagrin, it's used on golf courses and where my ball ends up when I hit wayward shots. So just to keep in mind that there are a number of jobs currently in this state. There are jobs that are potential to go through and economic development projects that are going to go through. But there's a delicate balance that we must keep. We have to go through and promote these jobs. It's important for us to get out of the struggling economy. But I think that we can do it while also protecting the environment and natural resources of this state. Also, that for every job created, the Greater Mankato Chamber of Commerce did a nice job of trying to lay out the impact of a facility there in that state or that city, that for every job created was 1.8 jobs, whether it be in restaurants, gas stations, hardware stores, ancillary jobs that feed into that facility. And then, Mr. Chairman, if you've heard from the state agencies, you've heard also from the industry, I would argue that it is one of the most heavily regulated industries that we have in this state, either through the state, through local, township, or county ordinances that you've heard these folks all testify. And, Mr. Chairman, with that, I'd like to wrap up my testimony and turn it over to Mr. George.
Thank you very much. Mr. George, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jason George. I'm the Legislative and Political Director for Operating Engineers Local 49. We represent about 13,000 heavy equipment operators in three states, hundreds of which work in the aggregate and sand industry, and some of which are here today. I don't know if they made it into the room or not. I can't see them, but they're in the overflow lot. So they're watching this issue very closely. I want to talk to you today about a few things related to jobs. Usually people that see me around the Capitol, that's all I ever talk about is jobs. And I'm going to continue that tradition today. Three things I want to highlight. I had some prepared remarks. I'll cut it down in the interest of time. I want to talk about the kinds of jobs. What kinds of jobs are these? These, first of all, I want to say a couple of things. These are not temporary jobs, which I hear too often. People make their careers doing these jobs, going from one project to the next. To talk about them as temporary jobs is pretty disrespectful, in my opinion. The second thing I want to say is that this is important and meaningful to a more than just a handful of people. There's a number of people, hundreds, that make their living in this industry. And as I said, they're watching this very closely. So what do I mean when I talk about good jobs? These jobs pay about $25 to $30 per hour. That's not easy to find in today's economy. They come with health insurance for families. They come with pensions. The average number of hours worked per year in a pit is 1,800. That's more than people that work on roads and bridges or transit. These are the highest of quality construction jobs, among the highest that you can get. In addition to that, these jobs offer less travel. You're going to one place in your local community for the most part, which is different than a lot of our people that work in the highway heavy industry. They're traveling a lot, and they're away from their family. I guess I'm out of time already. That's unfortunate, because I think jobs are an important piece of this equation. One thing I'll real quick run through is we've heard about MSHA that regulates the mining industry. We believe that protects workers in this industry. There's regulations in place. They've been in place for 100 years, and they improve continually. I'll close with this. What you do here this session will have consequences. There are complex issues to debate when it comes to sand mining, as you've heard today. You've heard both sides of it. Far too often in this political climate, the answer to complex issues is a simple no. We believe a statewide moratorium or a GEIS is a simple no. I'm asking you, and much more importantly, the people that are here today and the people that I'm representing are asking you, that want to make a future working in this industry, are asking you, let's find a way to say yes. Find a way that protects the environment and creates these good family-sustaining jobs. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. George. Next, we have John Glinczewski and Dean Fogstead from Trout Unlimited. I guess you're together. And then we also had a request. We apparently, Peggy Rader from the Red Wing City Council had been here and wanted to testify, and we had heard earlier, and I guess we can have you next, but please keep it brief. So after Mr. Glinczewski and Dean Fogstead. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members of the committees. My name is John Glinczewski. I'm with Minnesota Trout Unlimited. We're a conservation organization with members across the state, and we work to protect, restore, and sustain cold water fisheries and the spring sheds and watersheds they depend upon. I first want to acknowledge there are many other very legitimate concerns regarding this activity, but I want to focus on groundwater. I'm doing that because groundwater is the lifeblood of our trout streams in Minnesota. And for those of you don't know, groundwater is essentially it's spring water, and think of it as our drinking water. It's our reservoirs of pure, cold drinking water, and that's what we're talking about. The groundwater is in underground reservoirs in confined areas, confined by bedrock or clay, and it seeps out or discharges out in what we call springs or seeps and that is what gives Minnesota its very productive trout streams. They are completely dependent on this groundwater, and that's why we're very concerned about the prospect of widespread silica sand mining, which does not have adequate protections for groundwater. I don't have much time, so I'll just, I guess I'll be rather blunt. With all due respect to the DNR, state does not have adequate groundwater regulation, at least in practice. And that's what we're concerned about. We need a protective floor for our groundwater. We don't have it now. We hope this session we will get it before it's too late. So specifically, there are three things that the state could do to protect a very valuable slice of our economy, the recreational economy. Those three things would be to prohibit this new silica sand mining activity within 25 feet of the water table. Secondly, we could prohibit groundwater appropriations for the mining and processing, just period, whether that's on-site or at a processing facility. The industry does not need to use our future drinking water. There are other means. They can use surface water, and also once the sand is on a rail, it could be sent to another location to be sorted and washed. So secondly, as I said, we don't want to see our precious groundwater used for this purpose. And third, we'd like to see this mining and quarrying activity prohibited within a mile of any natural spring or seep or trout stream. If the state takes these three actions, this session, it'll do a pretty good job of protecting groundwater. Our current regulatory scheme does not do a good job of doing that. Currently, you pay $140, you get 50 million gallons of drinking water. Again, the industry has, you know, there are other options for the industry to be very profitable. We just would urge that the House and Senate take action this session to protect our groundwater. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Runcheski. Mr. Flugstad.
Thank you, Senator Marty and committee. My name is Dean Flugstad. I live in Lake City, Minnesota, and I'm a volunteer for the Rochester chapter of Trout Unlimited as a boots in the water installer and planner for the funds, the state funds through the Legacy Fund. We receive over $1 million every year to install the habitat improvement, which includes stabilization of banks and stream and rivers to prevent soil erosion. We create home for non-game species such as frogs, turtles, and snakes, and while improving the habitat for crayfish, sculpins, with an emphasis on three species of trout. The DNR sampling is showing that we have tremendous results in developing the southeast of Minnesota as a destination for fishermen and naturalists. These efforts are an economic driver for southeastern Minnesota, as witnessed last year by my visit with two fishermen from Bismarck, North Dakota, who, when asked if they had friends or relatives in Minnesota, I was surprised to hear that they were here just to fish and enjoy the area. This is quite remarkable, since Bismarck is halfway between Lanesboro and Billings, Montana, which is a mecca for trout fishing. Kind of tells you what's what kind of resource we have there. I met these two trout fishermen on Minnesota's premier trout stream, Trout Run. The headwaters are just south of Saratoga Township, where all these sand mines are being proposed. A breaching of one of these mines and spilling of sand-laden and chemically loaded effluent into a Trout Run would devastate Trout Run, where millions of dollars have been spent. I ask you, who is going to pay for the restoration? I don't think the sand mining company would do that. It would fall back on the taxpayers. So I would urge you, as everybody else has urged you, we need a moratorium and more study. And I thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Council Member Rader.
Senator Marty, Representative Hortman, members of the committees, I'm Peggy Rader, a city council member from the city of Red Wing. And I am here to represent the city in clear and unequivocal support of statewide efforts to study and mitigate the effects of silica sand mining. I'm going to skip over some of this testimony, but I do want to tell you that the City of Red Wing did do a one-year moratorium, and we did pass rezoning in October of 2012. In the course of completing our moratorium study, it was clear that some issues, especially related to air and water pollution and their health impacts, need additional research and study. In particular, we were able to find a great deal of information about the occupational exposure hazards related to small particulate air pollution for mine and quarry workers, but currently there is almost no information available about health hazards related to casual or ambient exposure to silica sand particulate. This is an area that statewide resources for research would be extremely helpful to local units of government that are trying to understand what types of standards should be put in place in order to protect public health. On February 11, 2013, the Red Wing City Council unanimously adopted a resolution in support of statewide efforts to study and mitigate the effects of silica sand mining operations. Our resolution supports three key elements: strong state-level permitting requirements and fees that will establish a minimum level of statewide regulation that a local unit of government may exceed; a statewide moratorium that will allow time for the state to complete an in-depth study of issues; and thirdly, a statewide study such as a generic environmental impact statement that would help to set state permitting standards and analyze potential impacts of the industry. We did pass out copies of that resolution that were passed last week. In conclusion, I want to thank Senator Schmidt and Representative Kelly for the work they're doing on this, and also acknowledge the work that Senator Howe did during his time in this body. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Rader. Just to tell committee members, I think what we'll do is take Fred Trundle from St. Charles and former Senator Howe is here and asked to speak very briefly as well. And then we will adjourn the joint meeting, and for 5 minutes, if the Senate committee can, we have a member of the LCCMR who stayed in town an extra day so he could have his confirmation thing, and I think it could be a 3-4 minute thing. So first, Fred Trundle, welcome to the committee, and then former Senator Howe. And for the other, before you start, one more thing. There are a lot of people, and I look at how many of them from Winona County, from Wabasha, from Houston County, from Fillmore County, and so on, we did not get to you. And I apologize for that. I know it's a long trip up here, and we do like to hear from people. And I will ask, if any of you are willing to put your comments in writing, we will promise to distribute them to all the members, both the House and Senate committees. But I apologize for that. Mr. Trundle, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for taking time to talk to us and allow us to share our perspectives on where we're coming from. My name is Fred Trundle. I live and have a business in St. Charles, Minnesota, where I run a certified financial planning practice. 57% of the people who voted in the last public election within the city of St. Charles have put their names on an initiative petition to prohibit the construction of this country's largest frac sand processing plant to be held or to be constructed within the city limits of St. Charles. 57%. Our township, which encompasses the town of St. Charles, our township supervisors have yet to have a single person in the township to come forward to tell them privately or publicly that they're in support of having that frac sand processing plant located within their township or within the city limits of St. Charles. Why? Dust, dust, dust. your Minnesota Pollution Control Agency tells us that they cannot monitor, have not been able to reasonably monitor the particulates coming off of frac sand activities. The dust that will be created with 90,000 trucks, 30,000 coming through St. Charles, 60,000 coming through the city of Utica, dust that will come from processing millions of tons of sand that will load 105 cars with 100 tons every day as it leaves the processing plant. Dust that will come off the piles, the stockpiled sand, as the sand is waiting to be processed through the plant. Water. This, I'll wrap up. We live within 12 miles of a city who had an entire sewage treatment pond, lagoon, disappear into the groundwater. Altura, Minnesota, a number of years ago, an entire sewer lagoon went down through our garst topography. We are unlike the rest of Minnesota. We have garst topography where sinkholes will and can develop. There's a sinkhole that's currently on the 300-acre site where they intend to potentially build this processing plant. We're concerned about our water. We're concerned about the dust. We're concerned about our health. We need your help in making sure that this is done safely for all of us. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Trundle. Senator Howe, and then with that, we're going to wrap up this part of the joint hearing. Welcome back to the committee.
Well, thank you, Senator Marty and Representative Hortman, members of the committee. I think in your packet you received a letter that I sent to the governor's office dated July 9th of 2012, asking at that time for the generic environmental impact statement. And I've attended several of the Environmental Quality Board meetings, and I just want to talk a little bit about that. I know you have the letter. I won't read it to you. I'm going to talk just a little bit about what the local communities need. And I heard from a lot of the constituents and from the local governments themselves that they can't deal with some of the larger issues as it relates to either cumulative water usage or ambient air quality issues. And I'm going to read an excerpt of the Environmental Quality Board petition that we sent to the board. A GEIS can ask, what are the issues? What are the impacts? What are the alternatives? A GEIS can develop the criteria, make recommendations, and provide policy direction that can be used in project-specific environmental review. This would give environmental concerns standing whether or not they can be quantitatively, specifically quantified, enable local government and proposers to factor them in to their siting, analysis, and review. A state-level GEI can also more effectively communicate expectations and develop requirements to ensure that proposers are consistently forthright, transparent, and accurate in their dealing with landowners, communities, and local governments, and vice versa. And I want to stress one thing. A GEIS is not a regulatory tool. It is not a regulatory tool. It is a fact-finding tool. A GEIS does not overstep. It does not preclude, doesn't take over local control. I'm a big advocate of local control. It doesn't prevent the siting or permitting process. And, you know, sometimes we need to get ahead of the curve here. It always seems that we react when our backs are up against the wall. Certainly, we've had time to talk about this, and I think what's important for this committee to realize is that the EQB, the Environmental Quality Board, I believe, is looking for direction from this legislative body, from the House and from the Senate, for direction. They've had this in front of them. They've got a meeting tomorrow, and they're not going to be taking this issue up tomorrow. I think the next following meeting they're going to be taking it up. So I think they're looking for guidance, and I just want to make that point clear that a GEIS will help. It'll give some facts. You've heard a lot of testimony on both sides today, but what you need to have is the facts, and that's what the local units of government need to have when they make decisions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Howe. And I want to thank the host committee for coming, and And also, on the way out, please, we're going to try a five-minute committee hearing of the Senate Environment Committee. So we thank you all for being here, and we ask that people leave quietly. And if you want to stay, if people want to stay around and talk with committee members afterwards, I think some will be around, so please do so. And with
Senator
that,
Marty, I just wanted to thank you for having the House members over here. And for the members of the audience who didn't get to testify, we do appreciate that you drove up and you were here and a part of this process. And please do send us your emails, and we will circulate those to the committee.
Thank you all, and thank you, Representative Hortman. With that, the joint committee is adjourned, and with that, the Senate Environment and Energy Committee will come to order. And the quorum is present. We just have one item on the agenda. William Faber, who is appointed from Brainerd, who's a member of the LCCMR. Welcome to the committee. I understand you were in town for a meeting of LCCMR yesterday, and you stayed around an extra day just for this. So please briefly present, because committee members will have to leave briefly, and I apologize for everything else happening
Thanks,
around.
Thanks, Honorable Chair Senator Marty. And I thought you guys invited all these people on my behalf, but unfortunately, that's not the case. They're all getting up and leaving. I'll keep this short because I know you all want to get out of here. So my name is Bill Faber. I'm from Cushing, Minnesota, which is a one-pony town halfway between Randall and Motley off Highway 10 on the west side of Camp Ripley. I'm here for my appointment by Governor Dayton and hopeful confirmation by this committee to serve on the Legislative Citizens Committee on Minnesota Resources. And to keep this brief, if I understand process correctly, y'all supposedly got a packet of my application materials, so I'm not going to read any of that to you. I'm a college instructor, so I know most of you haven't read through that thoroughly, so that's okay. I'll just close without getting into too much detail. I teach and am the program head of natural resources at Central Lakes College. I spent 13 years in Sweden studying moose, which is my background, rubber-nosed swamp dockies, we call them. And it's a great honor for me to be sitting here to be considered for serving on the LCCMR. So I'll just leave it at that and see if anybody has any questions for me.
Thank you. Questions from the committee. Senator Dibble.
Well, Mr. Chair, the fact that he's breaking new ground in the sweater vest arena, sweater vest with his own name on it, that's enough for me.
I debated whether I should wear a sport coat or this. I thought maybe invite all these people because I don't wear a tie very often, so maybe the word got out and some people wanted to see me in a tie, so I apologize.
New levels of sweater vestery.
Senator Sieben, yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, sir, could you just comment, please, on you know that there's been some debate within the legislature about distribution of this funding to various regions of the state. What's your perspective on that?
My perspective is I'm a scientist. I'm trained as a scientist. I look at applications that have sound science to it that are going to benefit the resources of Minnesota. And, you know, I'm well aware. I teach, you know, seven courses in natural resources, water, wetlands, soils, wildlife management, mammalogy and ornithology, and so on. So I'm not particularly concerned about the different areas. I understand that there's a concern that metro areas versus outstate and so on are well represented, and I think that'll be brought up in our commission. But yeah, I just look at the soundness of the applications, and we'll go from there.
Mr. Botzik, did you want to say something briefly?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair. Gary Botzik, Minnesota Conservation Federation, and my pass finally got me in the door, so I'm sorry I missed the rest of the hearing. But last time we needed passes to get in the legislative hearing was for sulfide mining downstairs with Senator Satbir Chaudhry. So it's interesting that mining would dictate the need for passes. So this is a big issue. But I want to come up here and speak for my friend, Dr. Bill Faber. He's on my Conservation Federation. Was it 12 years you spent in Sweden?
Almost 13.
13 years. We lose track. Moose research, too, at that. So
right.
God knows we could use some research on moose, his expertise. We need him on Asian carp, too, by the way. But I just want to put in a word of endorsement for him. He's a wonderful guy. I've had about four or five of his students on my board as well. He teaches his people, young people up in Brainerd Community College, whatever it's called, Central Lakes now. These are the experts that have become natural resources managers here in Minnesota and Wisconsin. So this is a good person, and I'm glad he's applied. And I would encourage you to get him to work. I understand he worked last night already. So Let's put him to work on some of Minnesota's resources issues.
Mr. Bartzik, I notice he's very diplomatic. He's fluent in Swedish, but he has a working knowledge of Norwegian.
Not to mention English.
Thank you, Gary.
Senator Eaton and then Senator Senator Hoffman was next. Oh, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Faber, is it Faber?
Yeah.
I was just wondering if you've had any opportunity to explore the preservation of the wolf population in Minnesota.
As far as, yes, I've followed it quite closely. I know most of the people that are working with wolves, the friends and colleagues of mine. So, yeah, I've followed it closely, talked about it. We talk about it in class. I look at things, and I always stress this to my students, I look at the biology of it more so than the socioeconomic, cultural, political side of those things. And when you look at it from a biological standpoint, I understand why a harvest was allowed biologically, because there wasn't anything against it biologically. And then the arguments that arise from that, again, based on socioeconomics and so on, I'm not going to say are secondary to me, but, I mean, my first stance is from a biological standpoint, so that's the way I look at it. That's the way I approach most of these things, having been trained as a scientist. And that's not always popular, because that isn't what – and I understand ultimately everything is a political decision. I always tell my kids that, but you argue on behalf of the biology and then let it be what it may. So –
Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chair, I think it's amazing, the study of moose. And last night you were over in the state office building with us, and what a great discussion, and to have your knowledge as part of the discussion for the greater effects of the state of Minnesota. I think that's a privilege that we can count on. And the appointment go as follows forward.
Senator Hoffman moves that the appointment of William Faber of Morrison County to the LCCMR be recommended for confirmation to the full Senate. Is there further discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. And with that, I want to thank the committee members for patience for this. And
thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Faber, and good
luck. My pleasure.
Thanks
for getting me in.
Thank you for your volunteer work on LCCMR. With that, this committee is adjourned.